And this is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
That's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to the Fastest 15. So I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, with the death of Burt Reynolds, I said, man, where's Harley Carnes when we need him? And I get dozens, scores of texts from listeners saying, that was Harley doing the Burt Reynolds old bit.
And you know why?
Yeah. Why?
Because they do the obituaries like in anticipation. So these things are produced before someone actually dies.
They can them.
Yes.
Years in advance.
Yes.
And then and the Burt Reynolds thing broke like 2 minutes before noon. Yes.
And they were ready to go.
And they didn't have time to have one of the current staffers do it. Mm-mm. So they pulled the old Harley. Were you able to pull the Harley?
Yes, it's in there.
Oh, man.
And it only aired at noon because now they've got the new guy.
Yeah, 1 o'clock they were able to turn it around.
But here's the difference. This Carly is recorded and not going off the cuff.
I like that you called him Carly.
Carly. Carly. See, clearly I'm
no,
not.
No, but it's still just as entertaining. Almost. Yeah, yeah. Just as entertaining.
Okay.
But, so yeah, this was a little bit of what Harley had to say about the death of Burt Reynolds.
He acted in more than 90 movies and hundreds of TV episodes.
Yeah, that's an unmistakable voice right there, Harley Carnes.
But if you need proof that Burt Reynolds was a cultural icon, how about his mention in a Bruce Springsteen song?
Okay, so then they played a bunch of clips of Burt Reynolds. Yeah. And let's see how Harley wrapped it up, because I was not in the studio.
You're not going to play the whole thing.
You want the whole thing?
Well, it's kind of funny how he references his.
Okay, I'll play the whole thing.
It's fun. I think it's fun. And if you missed it at noon, then
you'll never hear it.
Never again.
Reynolds driving a Trans Am in Smokey and the Bandit, just one of his many good old Southern boy roles that made him a box office star in the 1970s and 80s.
Talk to me, good buddy.
But Reynolds also had range. He could play tough in cop dramas, or romantic, as he did in Starting Over.
You know anybody I can go out with now?
Career highlights include...
Starting Over. Who was the co-star in that one? Is that... Will you find out?
Candace Bergen?
No.
Yeah, she's in it.
Candace Bergen? I thought it was somebody I had...
And somebody else as well.
I thought it was somebody that I had a huge crush on, because I remember seeing it in the theater only...
Jill Clayburgh.
Jill Clayburgh?
Those are the two. Females.
I didn't have a crush on Jill Clayburgh.
And it was Candace.
I didn't have a crush on Candace.
Okay, the wrong movie.
Well, it's
Mary Kay Place?
No, forget it.
1972's Deliverance, hailed by the critics. The CBS sitcom Evening Shade, which won him an Emmy. And 97's Boogie Nights. Reynolds received an Oscar nomination for playing a porn filmmaker.
Listen up, kid. Listen up. You're trying to do this all in one shot.
Not bad for a kid who stumbled into acting after an injury killed off his pro football ambitions. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
But they couldn't say how old he was because they didn't know when it was going to air.
No. And what I was going to say, so when it's Harley Carnes off the cuff, that's when he does those kind of tricky phrases and stuff.
I did think it was funny. You know you're talking about his death and you say it killed his career.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But not the best, but it's adorable. The good old days of Harley.
Was also a gifted baritone who recorded dozens of popular albums. But a tiger ate him.
Oh, was this our montage? I might have bumped that up.
Yeah, that's the one we goofed up with Jim Nabors when Jim Nabors died. Oh, man, I miss Harley. So anyway, it's nice to have made a return appearance today on The Big Show.
A tiger ate him.
And I noticed something else, too, right before the top of the hour. Before I get into all the new stuff, I played a soundbite of Sebastian Gorka talking about how the writer of that New York Times op-ed was guilty of sedition. And it was an interview that Gorka did on Sirius XM. And I didn't notice this when I listened to the soundbite this morning, but as we were playing it back right before the top of the hour, whoever is interviewing Sebastian Gorka, whoever the host of the show is, has a big nose whistle going on. Listen to this.
Only you would hear that.
Bring down the music here. Listen. Don't listen to Sebastian Gorka's voice at all. Listen to the host's nose whistle that's going on here.
it is somebody in the White House, then this is the definition of sedition. You just look it up in the Merriam-Webster's right now. Sedition is a crime. It is the overt or covert attempt to undermine a lawful authority or a constitutional order. If you disagree with the president, you are...
Oh, that's enough, but... Do I ever have a nose whistle?
Is that a whistle or...
It's a nose whistle. That's what that's known as. But why do you have your nose...
I'm glad that's what really stood out to you on that one.
It was all I could hear. Once I noticed the first one... Let me play a few more seconds. Let's see if we can hear one at the end here.
Not elected to undermine him.
That's right.
You know, I was a politically commissioned officer of the president. My job was...
Yeah, they got their nose right in the microphone while they're doing a phone interview. It's a nose whistle. That's what I noticed. That's the kind of journalist I am. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15. Oh, this is kind of sad. Do you remember a couple of years ago, we got an offer to have Marianne from Gilligan's Island, Dawn Wells, who lives in this area, with an offer to have her come in and be a guest. She was in studio.
I don't think she's current. She didn't currently live. She had lived here.
She didn't. I'm thinking of the professor. He lived on Bainbridge.
Sure.
But anyway, I really enjoyed talking. She couldn't have been more delightful and still just cute as a button.
Mm-hmm.
And I that was the big thing. When I was a kid, there was always a woman versus a woman. Like if you read Archie comic books, were you a Betty or a Veronica guy? Veronica Lodge was the rich heiress, brunette, kind of scheming, and Betty Cooper was the adorable blonde, wholesome.
Yeah. I always wanted to be Betty.
And Betty was my girl too. And then you had the Ginger versus Marianne thing, and I was always a Marianne guy.
Yes,
so
she's a sweetheart.
Oh yeah, so I really liked having her on the show. And do you get sick of that being everybody's reference point on your life?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag, you know, because I am grateful. I can't go anywhere in the world that somebody doesn't recognize me, Marianne, and it gave me a notoriety and a career boost. And yet again, it took me 3 years to be able to do vagina monologues in New York City. Oh, Marianne, are you kidding? In other words, you don't act. You're just a sweet little girl.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword. But I'm grateful. I have nothing bitter to say about it at all.
So that was just a couple of years ago, and almost exactly 2 years ago. It was September of 2016. So I saw this. Dawn Wells is severely down on her luck, $200,000 in the red. TMZ's reporting she's seeking financial aid from Gilligan fans.
And it's because she had an injury that required like months of rehab and surgery.
Broke her knee
and
had major surgery. And she's had to be moved to a smaller assisted living home. And it's just, you wonder why I say getting old sucks. She was the toast of the country back in the 60s. She's going to GoFundMe.
But getting old shouldn't suck.
Oh, it does.
But what sucks is that the cost of senior living is just getting so ridiculously high. Especially those of us who have elderly parents and you're trying to figure out what to do.
One of our sponsors is a long-term care guy, and that was a big deal for my wife and me because it was impressed upon me the importance
We were talking about $4,500 a month for a one-bedroom.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Then you have to go to Gilligan fans for a GoFundMe. That's sad.
Well, and that's a friend of a friend of hers did it,
right.
And she's just overwhelmed by the amount of money and the generosity people are showing.
Next up in the Fastest 15, I like this couple down in Pierce County. A husband and wife, they had been burglarized before, and they caught two burglars. They have a trailer on their property, and they caught two burglars in the act. And the husband and wife, Helen and Steve Jones, they talked to our news partners at Cairo 7, and Helen said what they told the burglary suspect.
You are not getting away with this, and you're not moving.
And so they cornered the guys.
Steve has a spotlight, and I had my gun.
So the husband grabbed a big, powerful flashlight, The wife grabbed a gun. They struggled with what to do.
Always thinking about whether or not to pull the trigger or not. That's the thing that kept running through my head. Is he going to run the other way? Is he going to run at me?
But he's thinking, if this guy runs, do I shoot him? And the reason that they were prepared for this, as I said, it's not the first time that they've been targeted.
We knew that they were probably the ones that got us 5 months ago because they went straight to the trailers again.
And like so many other people here in the Puget Sound area, this couple has just had enough with all the crime because of druggies.
It just is too many people out there trying to do this to the homeowners. For us, we decided we needed to protect our stuff and we will go to whatever extent we need.
So one of the guys ran off. The other one, they held at gunpoint until the police arrived.
He was more scared than anything else, I think, because he was just standing there apologizing.
The one guy that we had at gunpoint was a pretty bad guy. He's gone. He's off the street.
And they were able to catch the other guy who ran off, too. So good deal.
And the man, while they had him at gunpoint, he was begging them to let him go because he admitted to stealing for drug money.
Yeah, he said,
I'm addicted to drugs. I had to do it.
I needed my next fix.
Whew. High five. We did it. We got him.
I like that. I like people who take care of themselves. Did you guys watch the whole Nike Colin Kaepernick ad? It got released after we got off the air yesterday.
I haven't had a chance to. I've seen snippets.
So, big controversy, of course. We had Nate Boyer, the former Green Beret. We had Nate on our show yesterday. We talked with him about Colin Kaepernick, and he's a friend of Colin Kaepernick's.
You know, we're blind if we're going to say that racism does not exist. It absolutely exists. Is the level of oppression in our country comparable to that in some of the places I spent time in, such as the Darfur and Afghanistan, Iraq? I don't think so, from my experience. But at the same time, you know, I've lived the white experience in America, so it's very different.
So, as I said yesterday, I found the Nike slogan to be infuriating. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. And Colin Kaepernick hasn't sacrificed a thing. He hasn't given up money because he just went from being a failing quarterback to a corporate spokesperson. And he's getting big money from Nike. So he's sacrificed nothing. But for all of the people who serve our country and the military, many of them have sacrificed their lives. Many have sacrificed limbs. And to say sacrificing everything in the, you know, Colin Kaepernick, it's just infuriating. So that was my take until I saw the...
Could you acknowledge that he, you know, there is a sacrifice, and the message is to anyone. I mean, you don't have to lose your life to make a sacrifice.
No, but I don't know if he has sincerity of purpose because he won't do any interviews. And even Nate Boyer talked about that yesterday. He has been led by the nose. He's got, you know, a radical girlfriend who helped calculate this. He has corporate people who are using him. And I don't think he's sacrificed. I don't know if he has sincerity of motive. I just, maybe he does. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how calculating he was. I think his NFL career was on the rocks. And instead of suffering the shame and humiliation of being a backup quarterback on one of the worst teams and not being able to get a gig, he decided to become this, you know, this corporate sponsor, freedom fighter. I don't know what he's supposed to be. So anyway, I watched the Nike ad.
Yes,
all full of rage. Nike played everybody. The ad's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's Colin Kaepernick's voice, but it's showing people who have no legs and they're wrestling for their high school team. Mm-hmm. And it's showing all of these people who have overcome. And the message is that don't try to be the best player at your school. Don't try to be the best player in the NBA. Try to be the best player in history. And it's, set your sights high. And I was thinking, man, Nike, nobody would have watched this ad if they hadn't released that inflammatory, many people took it as anti-military. If they hadn't released that one day sooner, then nobody would have watched it.
Now you're thinking brilliant marketing.
Well, yeah, which is what I said yesterday. I said they're not dopes at Nike.
Yeah.
You know, they know what they're doing. Here's just a little bit of the ad.
If people say your dreams are crazy, if they laugh at what you think you can do, good. Stay that way. Because what non-believers fail to understand is that calling a dream crazy is not an insult. It's a compliment. Don't try to be the fastest runner in your school or the fastest in the world. Be the fastest ever.
It just goes on and on with message like that.
I like that message.
It resonates so well with me. And I was thinking, there's no way I would have even watched this if I hadn't been all furious at the perceived anti-military thing. Mm-hmm. It was another example of corporate America playing us like fiddles, like absolute fiddles. However, there's a brand new study out today. Nike, before the Kaepernick thing, had a plus 69 favorable impression among consumers. It has now declined 34 points overnight to plus 35 favorable. That's a poll of 8,000 people in the country. So Nike has at least initially lost a lot of public support with all of that. Okay, and finally in the Fastest 15, there was a protester in Missouri during their a congressional hearing with Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey. Or it was a congressman from Missouri who decided to shut down the protester who was screaming at that social media interrogation. But I like the way this congressman shut this guy down.
Ma'am, if you'll please take a seat or we'll have to have you, then you'll need to relieve.
President Donald Trump, help us. Please help us, Mr. President, before it is too late. Because Jack Dorsey is trying to influence the election, to sway the election.
What she said, I can't understand her. What?
Steal the election. That is why what she's censoring and shadow banning.
How about it in? 12 and a half, 15, 7 and a half, $20, 2 and a half, 5 and 7 and a half, 30. Hit $30 down here, 2 and a half, 5, 30, 5, 7 and a half, 40. Hit $40, 2 and a half, 5, 5, 45, 7 and a half, 50.
Officer, will you escort this young lady out, please?
Hit 2 and a half, down 5, 65, 7 and a half, 70. What, 2.5 now, 5.75, 7.5, $80 to 5, 85, 90.
It's John Curley with an accent.
Exactly right. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up, Ursula's going to check the news, and then I'm going to talk to the attorney for the owner of the Showbox Theater. They are suing the city of Seattle, saying that the city council is illegally trying to steal a citizen's private property. Details next. Well, it's a story we have been covering extensively. The Showbox Theater is scheduled to be sold, and a 40-story condo building on the site. But the music community in town was very passionate in its defense of the Showbox. They had a petition with 100,000 signatures. The city council said, we might find a way to save the Showbox, which I told you as soon as I heard it, sounded like theft of private property by our government. The attorney representing the owner of the Showbox, the seller, is Brad Keller, and he joins us here on Cairo Radio. Brad, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Happy to be here. Good morning, Dory.
I, like a lot of people, I like the Showbox. I've been to shows there. I have wonderful, fond memories of the Showbox. But I was trying to make sense of what the city was doing to your client here. So give me your take on what's transpired to get government in the way of what was a private real estate deal.
This controversy isn't about whether you liked the Showbox or didn't like the Showbox. Many of us went to a lot of rock and roll shows there that we enjoyed over the years. The controversy is really about the city trying to use its powers to really take away the private property rights of an owner. This property has been under ownership for over 20 years by the current owners, and it was always intended to be a development site. And consistent with the city zoning, it was going to be a development site until the city very recently, in a very arbitrary and capricious manner, decided to effectively downzone it and really took away the virtually most of the entire development potential of the site.
And so the I talked to a lot of commercial real estate people, and you know, the best figure, and I wrote about this on my blog, I thought it was probably worth about between 30 and 60 million. I know that's a broad number. I understand you are suing the city for 40 million, is that right?
Well, the object of the suit is really not at this juncture about money. The primary purpose of the suit is to really first give the city an opportunity to get its senses back and hopefully rescind the what is an illegal ordinance. And if they don't rescind it, to ask the courts to declare the ordinance to be invalid. Getting the ordinance, which is effectively a downzone of the property, rescinded is and always has been the primary objective of the lawsuit.
Well, and what I've said all along, Brad, is if the music community, and I have friends in the music community, if the music community wants to save the Showbox, they need to come up with whatever the sale price to this Vancouver developer was, they need to come up with that money. They need to put it the Showbox in a trust and give your client fair market value. But using the power of government to steal your client's private property, I mean, I've always said private property rights are the bedrock foundation of a free republic. And I get very nervous when I see government trying to steal private property.
Well, in this instance, you know, it may be popular in some quarters for the government to exercise its, you know, powers to try and take somebody's private property.
Sure. Yeah, things like eminent domain.
The next time it's not going to be as popular, and it may be your property or my property. And that's really what's going on here, is that the city has engaged in what is a very egregious example of what is considered to be an illegal spot zone. And it has the impact of denying the property owner of not only his property rights, but also his constitutional rights. It is an illegal taking. That's what the lawsuit contends, and that's what we believe the ultimate outcome will be in court.
Yeah, well, I have no doubt about that. The other thing that I find intriguing is, you know, doing the numbers on this, there in the 40-story condo building, there would be yearly property taxes over the next 30 years. I think that would be at least $250 million. There's the real estate excise tax every time one of those units sells. That would be tens of millions of dollars. The city's not only taking your client's property if they were successful in this, but they would also be taking tax revenues from the taxpayers when they tell us they don't have enough money all the time.
Well, that's absolutely correct, Dory. And in addition to the taxes that you're identifying, and perhaps somewhat ironically, you know, we have a real problem in Seattle with affordable housing. And because of the way the current zoning exists, if this property was developed the way the British Columbia developer would like to develop it, that development alone would immediately generate an approximately $5 million payment that would subsidy that would help go into providing affordable housing here in Seattle. So by trying to block this project, not only is the city depriving itself and the taxpayers of the tax revenue that you're referring to,
right,
but also the benefits of a $5 million payment that would go towards what is the significant issues of affordable housing in our city.
Would it be an option, what I said a couple of minutes ago, if the big money music industry people, if they wanted to buy the property for what is the fair market value to the Canadian developer, if they wanted to pay the same amount and put the theater in a trust and say we'll operate this at a loss every year because there's no way with a $40 million purchase price that they could make their nut. But is that an option for the music community to say, hey, we'll privately save this place?
All options are potentially on the table here. Nothing is cast in stone. My understanding is that the Canadian purchaser has also indicated a willingness to discuss a new development that would incorporate a venue. That's an option. The potential for somebody else to come in and potentially buy the property, that's an option that would, of course, be considered. Of course, now there is, you know, there are, it's more than just the property owner. that's involved. There's a buyer who has a contract and a right to buy the property, so it would be a three-way discussion that would have to occur.
Yeah. Well, I just, as you alluded to earlier, Brad, when we let sentimentality, and we all have warm feelings about the place, but when sentimentality starts driving government decisions for private property takings, I think that's really scary, and that's something we all should be on the watch for.
In addition to the issues about private property rights here, there's also sort of a fundamental issue about the way our city government works
Yes.
and the way it's supposed to work. What happened here is what the courts, I think, will view as a quasi-judicial type action, because it is a rezone of a particular piece of property. And when government officials act in a quasi-judicial capacity, there are certain rules and protocols that they're required to comply with in order to give all of us confidence that there's a fairness to the process. And one of them is that they not engage in sideline communications with affected parties, and that they try and remain objective and
yeah.
unbiased. And what we had here was the absolute antithesis of that. We had several of the council members who actually became cheerleaders for the opposition groups and for the groups that wanted to take this property away from the developer. It really, really shed our city council and our city government in a very, very unflattering light.
Yeah, and it's the first time our city council's ever been in an unflattering light, too.
Well, I'll let your viewers be the judge
yeah,
of that.
All right. Brad Keller, he's the attorney for the current owner and prospective seller of the Showbox Theater. Brad, I enjoyed talking with you. Thanks for coming on with me this afternoon.
Have a nice day.
And I'd love to hear what you think about all this. The Online Trading Academy text line. You can reach me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. I was just reading yet another study yesterday about how college students and millennials in general. Now, if you're, we got a lot of millennials who listen to the show. And you know why? The kids love me. But increasingly, so I'm probably not talking to you if you're listening to this show and you're a millennial. But as a general broad trend, college students and millennials are having an increasingly difficult time dealing with life, coping. And all of this started with the, you know, the trophy generation and safe spaces. And I was reading an excerpt of a new book that is out about just how emotionally fragile young people are. And the more they've been coddled by their parents, we are now seeing the manifestation of all of that. There was a story that we told you about a few weeks ago, and I have an update on this story. But it was a mom who let her 8-year-old daughter take the dog for a walk in the neighborhood. And that just had incredible consequences.
A couple of weeks ago, Corey Wyden and her 8-year-old daughter, Dorothy, were spending the day together at home when Dorothy took their Maltese puppy, Marshmallow, for a walk.
By the way, a Maltese named Marshmallow. How much more adorable can this get?
She was gone for 5 minutes. I was in the backyard. I could see her through the yards because she, when she gets around to the other side, she calls through to me, "Hi, Mom." And I can usually see her big bow going through.
45 minutes later, the doorbell rang. Dorothy thought it was her play date, so she opened the door, and it was the police.
Dorothy was hysterical. It scared her to death to fling open the door, expecting to find a little friend, to find a police officer, a squad car, somebody with a gun. It just threw her off.
So a neighbor saw this 8-year-old girl taking the dog for a walk by herself in the middle of the afternoon, calls the police. So it's not just that we've got, you know, overly nannying parents, but we've got nosy neighbors who are trying to overprotect our kids. Anyway, the mom that you just heard in that story, Corey Wyden, she's written an op-ed in USA Today. And the headline is, "My 8-year-old daughter walked her dog alone, then police came knocking on my door." And she talked about how it was just the middle of a pleasant afternoon. The neighbor told the police a 5-year-old was out by herself, and that's why the cops responded. And the police said, well, she wasn't endangering the child. She was letting the kid walk the dog. But this is what it's come to. We can't even let an 8-year-old walk a dog in the neighborhood. Now, I'd feel a little better if it was a German shepherd that could attack anybody who tried to snatch up the girl. But what's happened is we've exaggerated the dangers to our kids. You know, we use them as political pawns. The gun control activists. They take a school shooting and they convince every child in America that they are in imminent danger of being mowed down at school, when the truth and the statistics, the numbers, the facts are school is about the safest place for children in America. But we have adults who will use kids as part of their political activism. And they're turning the kids into basket cases. And I talked after the horrible Florida Parkland shooting that, yes, that was awful what happened. But what's even more awful is that we have a record number of suicides in teens and young adults who are unable to cope with life and with the world. And I don't know that these activists who are using children for their cause, are they willing to take responsibility for the fact that they are using those children in a detrimental way to their mental health? But this mom in her USA Today piece, she also said that this involved, because she and her daughter are low income. And she says that low income families are especially vulnerable to our mom shaming culture. It wastes resources and hurts children to call the police on safe families. The kid just was walking the dog. I've told the story before. When I was 5 years old, I heard the Batmobile was going to be down at Shulshul. I snuck down, summer afternoon, had to cross 5 lanes of traffic at Golden Garden so I could go see the Batmobile. Imagine if I'd done that in 2018. Although I'd love to be 5 again, man. Okay, Big Lead to 2 is next.